Hey there, and welcome back to Holistic Health Masterclass with me, your host, Brett Horse. I hope you have been enjoying the last few episodes. I know I've been putting a few out in rapid fire. Last week's session with Dr. Boyce was pretty insightful, I thought, and hopefully some of you got to check out the Green Medicine Summit with some really, really awesome healers, visionaries, etc., etc. I don't really have any major announcements. I actually do have something that I will be announcing next week, so hopefully you can tune into that, and definitely catch up with me on my Facebook page, which is Holistic Health Masterclass -Brett Hawes, if you just look that up. You can follow there. I'm going to be announcing something pretty special, I feel, anyway. It's part personal, part educational, but it's going to be running for about 6 to 8 weeks. So anyway, dial into that, and I will be making that announcement again next week. All right, so today's episode, pretty cool episode, I got to say. I sit down with my dentist, Michael, or Dr. Michael Schechter. He owns a dental clinic in downtown Toronto and is very, very progressive, very forward-thinking, and very holistic in his approach. So if you've ever wondered about biological or holistic dentistry, this is really the episode for you. We tap into a lot of different things, you know, talking about things like mercury fillings and the alternatives. We talk about removing mercury fillings, the downsides and dangers of root canals, and really what a root canal actually is. And we get into a bunch of other stuff as well that I think you would probably find quite interesting. You know, talking about things like doing bacterial swabs, essentially, in the mouth and using that to evaluate whole body health, in a sense. We get into things like meridians as well. So if you've never heard of that, it's a very interesting concept coming from Chinese medicine, where essentially the teeth are connected to different parts of the body. And when we see issues in the teeth, we might see issues in those parts of the bodies. And again, this, you know, ties in quite heavily with root canals, and especially botched root canals. So I do apologize in advance for the audio quality. There was a bit of background noise on Michael's end. We sort of got it straightened out within the first few minutes, but if you hear some clanging and banging and all sorts of other stuff, we do have a good chuckle about that. Anyway, just keep pushing on, and I do apologize for the audio. So yeah, enjoy today's episode with Dr. Michael Schechter.
Okay, welcome to the show, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. And as I might have said in the intro, because as some of you might know, I do the intros afterwards, but I'm actually sitting here today talking with my dentist, Dr. Michael Schechter, which is pretty awesome. So, Michael, you've been my dentist for quite some time now, and we've had some pretty good discussions about all things holistic and health-related. So perhaps for our listeners who don't know you, because I do know that a lot of them actually do know you, by the way, perhaps just give us a bit of background yourself. You know, your dad is a very well-known dentist as well. So, you know, how did you get interested in this? How did you find yourself where you are today?
Sure. So, you know, life is a journey. And when I went to undergrad, I was trying to decide what to do, like many people that go to university. And my roommate in undergrad was actually had the strong desire to be a dentist. And that was kind of my first foray into it. And I, of course, spoke to my dad. And my dad initially tried to talk me out of it.
Okay.
I think more because he just wanted to make sure it was something that I was passionate about myself, more so than just saying, oh, my dad's a dentist, my buddy's a dentist, I should be a dentist. So my first inclination was I really enjoyed, you know, the art and science of dentistry, you know, helping people improve their health and at the same time really using my hands. There's a lot of problem solving and almost engineering on a, you know, hourly basis that is a little bit above and beyond, let's say, what you know, a family doctor would do. And as I learned more and was opened up to different schools of thought while I was in school, I recognized that the conventional approach to medicine wasn't the only approach. And I started to see a lot of flaws in that system. I worked at Mount Sinai Hospital in the respiratory department for a little bit. And I quickly realized that, at least in my opinion, into what I saw and understood, there was perhaps a different way or a better way to treat people. And I started to look more into naturopathic medicine. And it was actually at the end of school, there was a period of time where I got into both naturopathy and dentistry, and I was trying to decide what should I do? What do I want to do? And then I started to have this idea, well, maybe I can combine the two. Maybe I can do something where I'm practicing dentistry, but taking a more holistic approach. And here I am today.
Yeah. And I mean, and I got to say, like, that's a great summary. You totally embody all of that. And as I said, you know, we've known each other for some time now, so I know that you really do that. You know, you are a busy guy. Like, I've been to your clinic. You have a lot of different stuff going on under that one roof. But, you know, perhaps we'll just start at ground zero and explain to people, you know, what makes you a little bit different, or what does conventional dentistry do that you would do differently, and take it from there?
Okay, sure. So, I mean, there's so many different facets to how you can look at my practice or practice of holistic dentistry. My foundation is to try to say, you know, I really want to reduce toxicity, reduce invasiveness, and focus on prevention. When I finished dental school, I embarked on a more of a holistic training, and I studied under Andre Stain, a homeopath in Montreal. And so I grew to appreciate some of the foundations of holistic medicine, including do no harm and try to get closer to the cause of the problem. And so I tried to break down dentistry in a similar fashion. So one of the things that we've done is taken each procedure, whether it's a filling or a root canal or an extraction, and try to use the friendliest materials we can, and also try to educate our patients to prevent those problems from occurring in the first place. Another example that I'll give you is, I have firmly seen in my practice, and just from, you know, learning, speaking to people, reading, researching, that there's a strong connection between what's going on in the mouth and what goes on in the rest of the body. And so by educating patients and also teaming with practitioners like yourself, we can improve our patients' overall health, which will then improve their oral health, and vice versa. If we can improve their oral health, often we can remove some of the pressures on their system, which are complicating their overall condition or systemic health.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and that's something that you and I spoke about really, I think probably one of the first times we ever met was just that, because one of the things that sort of struck me as being a little bit different, aside from the different types of practitioners that you actually have in your clinic, is, you know, doing, running, and I'm probably going to botch the name. I mean, I'm not a dentist. I'm going to botch it entirely. But you did a test to actually check for microbes and stuff going on in the mouth. And then we actually sat down and spoke about that. So what exactly was that? I know candida was one of the things you were checking for, and so inflammation and stuff like that, but perhaps you can elaborate on that a bit more.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, for me, it comes down to trying to get reproducible, scientifically backed baselines for my patients. So when it comes to gum health, the standard of care in Ontario and Canada is to probe around the teeth. So we stick this little probe between the gum and the tooth, and we're measuring how far down is the bone. And the idea is that if the bone has dropped down, you're going to have a greater pocket, so a higher number. Mm. And the higher the number, then the greater the issue is there. The challenge for me was always, well, you know, bleeding or inflammation can come from a variety of sources. If somebody's grinding their teeth, if somebody has systemic inflammation, let's say they have, you know, diabetes or heart disease, or maybe they're not cleaning their teeth as well. But I wanted to try to get a little bit deeper into what's going on. So we take a sample of plaque from under the gums, and look at it under the microscope. There's no hocus pocus to it. Basically, if we see microbes, then we can identify those as potential pathogens that are causing harm. If everything looks clear, then it's a great indication that that person is healthy. So when we take a look at the slide or the plaque analysis that you're referring to, we look for different microbes, whether they're anaerobic spirochetes or candida or different parasites, and we can also see levels of inflammation. We can then treat those microbes and do a follow-up slide to see if those microbes have reduced. And I'll tell you, like, you kind of mentioned at the beginning about working with these different practitioners or this more holistic approach. Well, this is something that really drew me in to working with different practitioners. And it pretty much, to my understanding, works like this. If you have unhealthy microbes under the gums, it's a very strong indication that you have those microbes in your body. And so it really relates back to the microbiome balance or type of bacteria that you see in your body. So I used to spend a lot of time disinfecting and cleaning patients' gums when they had higher levels of certain microbes, but they would often come back, meaning I would do a slide in 6 months or a year or 2 years, and the microbes that we had worked so hard to eradicate would come back. And what I came to appreciate is that we really need to work on the bacterial levels or concentrations or the microbiome, not just in the mouth, but in the whole body. And that's where that partnership comes in. We can clean the mouth, but we need the nutritionist or the naturopath or the medical doctor, somebody to work with our patients to also regain that overall balance. Mm-hmm.
Which makes perfectly good sense. I mean, that's really whole body health, right? And you sort of get into that chicken or egg scenario where did the person start out with unhealthy dental, a dental scenario that then translated into a microbiome situation, or was it vice versa, or did they both happen at the same time? And maybe no one really knows that answer. But I think you're pretty spot on, because from where I'm looking at it, you're talking about, and I don't mean this in a bad way, it's kind of superficial. You know, it's a little bit of a Band-Aid without working on the whole body.
Right.
So I think that's, fantastic. And one of the things that really does set you apart, because I've never, ever heard of any other dentists. I'm sure they're out there. But in my personal, bubble that I live in, I had never experienced anything like that until I actually started working with you. So
I think it's growing in popularity slowly.
And I was going to ask you that. I mean, like, obviously we all live in our own worlds, right? So what's like out there? I mean, do you feel that this is gaining more popularity? Like people are starting to come around more? Do you think that this is going to become the default at some point?
I'm not sure. It's a really good question. Like I think for me, it's also hard to gauge because I'm also in my own little bubble. Right. But I definitely find there are more, hygienists and dentists that are reaching out and looking for alternatives and looking to try new things. I definitely think that there's been a much, better pushback from patients, where patients seem to be more educated and are looking for different answers and are finding that maybe the same old isn't working for them as well.
I think we're finding that across the board, to be honest. I mean, I think that this is why we'll just sort of say the field of natural health as a whole is really exploding. And I mean, it has been for some time now. Because yeah. I think people are looking for non-invasive, non-toxic, safer alternatives,
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, I also think that it's important for us to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. I've always said there's a time and a place for everything,
Right, 100%. I mean, I use that example all the time with antibiotics. I mean, in my opinion, it should be one of the last options, but it's an option that we sometimes need.
Yeah, and you do that sometimes. I mean, obviously, as you need to do that, and you're also doing surgery, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, today is actually my surgical day, so I took out a few sets of wisdom teeth today, and cleaned out a grafting site today. So, yeah, it keeps me busy. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you, just circling back a little bit here to this idea of how, and maybe you don't know the answer, it might be a bit of a curveball here entirely. Do you know much about meridians and teeth? You know how yeah. I think it's Chinese medicine, you know, how the different teeth are connected to different organs of the body and so on. Do you know much about that?
I know a little bit. I know.
It's hard to find information on that, actually. I mean, I've looked around over the years and there's not a lot out there.
I mean, if you can Google like a tooth meridian chart. I think I have one on my website. Schechterdental.com, if I can just plug that.
We're gonna put that all up there at the end. Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Basically, you know, it's interesting. Like, I have had patients that have had issues with a specific tooth, and then when they look up the meridian chart that affiliates with a certain organ, there often can be a connection. Which I find, one aspect of having like a, you know, a localized infection in the mouth, or even placing an implant in a mouth, is how does that impact the meridian system? And I've heard different reports on that. But I don't know, you know, specific detail. My background is more in homeopathy than in traditional Chinese medicine. So I don't know a lot about it. Along that vein, just something that's really interesting is I read a really interesting book by a Japanese researcher 2 years ago. It's called Teeth Are Our Organs. And his research was based on the hypothesis that as people age, there's a significant correlation between healthy aging and healthy teeth. And the conclusion of his research was that having healthy teeth in your mouth in your 70s, 80s, 90s has a direct impact on many different systems in the body, including blood pressure and balance and memory and sugar levels, things that you would never think are connected to dentistry. And I think a part of that might be like the meridian health affiliated with teeth. Mm-hmm. He thought it had to do with the vibration of teeth, the sound of teeth. But it's like a fascinating avenue.
Yeah, definitely something that's outside the box. I have not heard that before.
Yeah, no, neither had I until I read this book. It's really interesting.
Mm. So on that note, let's talk a little bit about root canals, because I mean, what I've heard is really that, you know, the root canal itself, depending on the tooth, is going to affect a corresponding organ. And I've done very similar type of things to you, again, with my very limited knowledge of dentistry, of course. And I've sort of said to people, well, look, you know, when did this tooth thing happen? When did you get the root canal down? Or when did you lose that tooth? Or, you know, and then connect that to, oh, do you see the timeline? Like the X problem over here started at exactly the same time. And it kind of blows their mind a little bit. But perhaps, you know, obviously I'm talking in circles here because we are coming back to this whole meridian situation. But something that I get asked a lot about is the idea of root canal. So perhaps you can just sort of walk us through the procedure as best we can on an audio platform, and then talk about what some of the potential consequences are of root canals.
Okay, sure. So, you know, cut me off if you have a question. It's a bit of a lengthy answer.
Go for it.
You know, the root canal controversy is definitely one of the controversies when you look at dentistry from a more holistic perspective. What's important to emphasize is that according to Health Canada and the Royal College of Ontario, root canal therapy is considered to be the safe treatment for teeth that require pulpal therapy or root canal therapy. As long as the tooth is symptom-free, meaning there's no infection on the x-ray and there's no, you know, symptoms like pain, then that's considered a safe and go-to treatment. Essentially, what is a root canal is that, you know, the part of the tooth that you can see is the crown. The roots is the part of the tooth that's embedded in the bone. if a cavity or trauma or a crack, whatever it is, descends beyond just the crown and into the pulp part of the tooth, in order for us to save the tooth, we have to do a root canal. The live tissue that's inside the tooth, the nerve tissue, the cardiovascular tissue, gets very inflamed. It can become necrotic or infected, and it can be quite painful. And the only way for us to deal with that is to either remove the tooth or treat the tooth with the root canal. So what is the root canal? We drill a hole in the tooth, and instead of just stopping in the crown portion like we would do with a filling, we go down into the canals of the roots. So we're not removing the roots. We're not treating the whole root. There's a central canal in each root. So in a front tooth, there's one canal. In a molar, there's three canals. And we clean out that main canal with a liquid. The convention is to use bleach. And then we fill that canal with rubber. The surrounding root structure, the dentin, is made up of millions of tubules. It's a hollow or porous type material. The bacteria, the necrosis, the infection that causes the root canal doesn't just stay in the main canal, but it diffuses into the surrounding dentin and bone. So once the root canal has been completed, there's lingering bacteria behind.
And I think that this is where a lot of people get tripped up, right? Because this is the controversy.
This is the controversy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what I was going to say is that this is basically where the disconnect occurs. So from a conventional perspective, we recognize that we leave bacteria behind, but as long as there's no lesion on the X-ray, meaning there's no obvious infection and there's no pain, we consider it to be a safe procedure. And there isn't a great appreciation for how, you know, let's say, you know, a low-lying chronic infection in the mouth can impact the body. Like it's just there, you know, medicine is very compartmentalized. It's very common for me to have a conversation with a colleague, a medical colleague, a dental colleague, and explain some of the symptom changes that I've seen with the patient. And they just look at me like I'm nuts. Not to digress, because I want to try to explain this point. So from a conventional perspective, that's okay, you know, to have this, you know, lingering bacteria behind, as long as we're sign and symptom free. In the holistic community, there's a conversation about how that lingering bacteria can impact our health. So according to the TCM model, that chronic infection will, you know, impact the meridian line. So the organ affiliated with that tooth can be impacted. The Weston Price model talks about a focal infection, or how a localized infection can drain into our body and impact our most susceptible system. But basically, it's a conversation about how having this low-lying chronic infection in the mouth either can have the bacteria and toxins impact our body, or the immune system will react to it and it can trigger some type of autoimmune issue.
Right. And yeah, I mean, you touched on so much there. So I just want to sort of dissect a little bit of that.
Sure.
From the meridian standpoint, I mean, we're coming back to that again, but are we kind of saying that we've got this now, it's almost like an infection that's where bacteria is now actively growing and translocating through the body? You know, so it's actually physically depositing into another part of the body, or is it merely a sort of energetic reflex kind of thing?
So I don't know what the answer to that is.
Okay, and that's fair enough. I mean, maybe, I know, maybe we're not there yet. But like,
it's, you know, our diagnostic tools in 2018 are not perfect. Mm-hmm. So sometimes somebody will come in with pain in a tooth that's been root canal treated, let's say. Okay. And they'll come to see me and they'll say, look, I got pain in this root canal. Is there something wrong with it? And I'll take an X-ray and the X-ray will be fine. They'll go to a root canal specialist. This is a reality. I'm thinking of a specific patient in my mind right now. She went to a root canal specialist. The root canal specialist said, the root canal is fine. He did a CT scan. She has three root canals side by side in the upper right. Did a CT scan. So to the best of our medical imaging right now, they were all fine. she came back to see me and she said, you know what, I've thought about it and I want to take out my root canals because I'm concerned about how they're impacting my health. And I said to her, listen, you know, we can have the conversation, but you know, according to the CT scan, everything is okay. Mm-hmm. She came back to me literally 3 weeks later with a lesion, a fistula in the upper right affiliated with one of the root canals.
Wow.
That type of chronic infection had been brewing for a long time. It was not detectable by any devices that we're able to use right now. So when you're asking me if in a quote unquote healthy root canal, if there's bacteria traveling to an organ or if it's just an energetic issue, I don't know what the specific avenue is or what the issue is. All I can do is go by my patient's responses. And right. So I have had, and I tell this to patients, every patient that walks in the door that asks me this question, I'll tell them the same thing. There's no way to know if a root canal is creating or contributing to the symptoms that somebody is having. Sometimes I remove these teeth and we see significant change in our patients. Huh. And sometimes I remove these teeth and I see no change.
So it's really a case by case basis then, right?
It's a case by case basis. And we don't always know.
Yeah.
So it also, you know, comes down to health philosophy. I think that with like many other things, it is a pressure on our system and how well is our system able to deal with it. So how well genetically are we able to deal with those type of toxins? What other pressures are on our system?
Yeah, well, and I think that's exactly it. I mean, coming to your next point, which is immune system. I mean, obviously, it's going to put a stressor on your immune system. Period. But B, I mean, what if you also have food allergies? What if you also have yeast or pathogenic bacteria growing in the guts? What if you also have an autoimmune disease, and so on and so on? You know, that right. could be the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back, right?
Yeah, but I say it, and when I tell the patients, it's like, you know, you can also try treatment, and if there's a roadblock to health, then you can look at some of these dental controversies. Because often it's like, you know, not getting better, why not? Oh, well, maybe there's this, you know, extra thing that's inhibiting healing.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm hearing is take the common sense approach, which would obviously be to improve your gut function, blah, blah, blah. And then if you're plateauing, that's when you might want to start thinking outside the box. And again, root canals might just be one of those things.
I think so. And sometimes, you know, for example, like we'll try to improve the analysis, the microscopic analysis that we're doing, and we're not getting much change. And so sometimes thinking a little bit outside the box is saying, well, hold on, there's this electrical current that's generated by amalgam fillings. Maybe if we cut that out of the equation, the microbiome can be better balanced, or the bone can heal better. So it's sometimes tricky to figure out the source of the problem, but 100% a common sense approach would make is always the best answer. Mm-hmm. The only research I've ever really seen on this was done by Weston Price in his original work. And it's what really opened me up to this sort of world, where his whole philosophy was based on the toxins in the mouth contributing to chronic disease or systemic disease. So he would take an infected tooth from somebody that was diseased and implant it into a rabbit. So for example, he would take a tooth.
Sounds sci-fi right now.
it's very sci-fi. He was doing this in the early 1900s. He took a tooth from somebody with heart disease, implanted it into the back of a rabbit, and then the rabbit would then develop heart disease.
Wow.
That was basically his work. It's fascinating, you know, as a dentist to consider the implications of what we're doing and the connectivity of all these different systems. I mean, it's really unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, I've been a huge fan of Weston Price, again, not even from, obviously not from a dental perspective per se, but from all of the other work that he did, just from a nutrition perspective.
Nutritional, right, right.
Yeah. I mean, that was like, that's probably what he's more well known for. A real pioneer in the field of natural medicine, I believe.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He was a dentist.
No, I know he was a dentist. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Cause whenever it says, oh, you know, people say Dr. Weston Price and everyone automatically assumes that he's a doctor, like an MD. And I always correct him. I'm like, no, he was actually a dentist. And one of the things that he, perhaps this is actually worth talking about here, one of his, I'll just give the sort of main tenet of his philosophy. He traveled around the world and he actually observed people's diets. You know, he lived in a very unique time because there was this crossover period of more industrialized and processed foods that were finding their way to more remote areas of the world. And so he would go to, I tell you what, if I was alive back then, I would have loved to have had his job. It was like the coolest job ever. He just got to travel around the world to these crazy places.
Switzerland and then,
all over. I mean, like everywhere, like all over.
And Kenya, he went to Kenya, I think, and the Inuit. He went to the Inuit.
Yeah, the South Pacific Islands, the Highlands of Scotland. He was all over the place. But his general observations were really simple, in that he would examine people's dental health based on what they ate. And he noticed fairly consistently that people who were eating more processed foods had poor dental health, simply put. He noticed like the arches weren't properly formed, there were way more cavities, even things, I believe, like bone calcium levels were lower and so on and so on. And that's probably the biggest thing, you know, that I've taken away from his work is just the impact that what we're doing from a dietary standpoint and from a lifestyle standpoint, the impact that has on our dental health. And obviously we know, I mean, on our overall health. Which really ties into your philosophy, I feel.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit, you touched on something about a mercury filling, like an amalgam, right? And obviously, you know, are people still doing those nowadays? I believe everything was switched out to be a composite. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't think we're quite there yet.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, to my knowledge, the University of Toronto, I'm pretty sure still teaches that amalgam fillings and mercury fillings is the standard of care in the back of the mouth.
Really? Okay, wow.
It's from a filling material perspective, it's amazing. You can place it in a wet environment. It's antimicrobial because it's mercury. Mm-hmm. It's self-sealing because it rusts or corrodes, and so it helps to seal the margin of the filling to the tooth. It's easy to place. It's relatively inexpensive. And again, you know, it's a controversy according to Health Canada and the Royal College. Once the amalgam is in your mouth, it's considered to be safe. It's definitely viewed upon differently internationally. In Sweden, there's a mercury ban in the country. In Britain, you can't be cremated with your mercury fillings.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Huh. They'll put it in their teeth, but they don't want it in their air and their water.
So don't burn it. Yeah, but it's... okay.
So it's... Yeah, you know, and I think that in Ontario at least they've moved to the point now where there's a recognition that greater protection should be had when they're being placed or replaced, but they're considered safe when they're in the mouth. The IAOMT, the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, has published numerous papers and actually has a great video on YouTube, The Smoking Tooth, that talks about the ongoing off-gassing of mercury from these fillings.
Mm. Yeah, and that's something that I did want to touch on. So, I mean, we don't need to really say much more because I do believe that is what's going on. And obviously, I've learned that from other people. But, you know, is in your knowledge, I mean, have you heard of any interactions with Candida and mercury? Like, do you know much about that?
So, yeah, a little bit. Like, I actually think it has more to do with the electrical current more so than the mercury.
Okay.
I might be wrong on this, but, when I was saying when it was, almost like a roadblock to healing, and I was saying about how, you get these different microbes in the mouth, I find that when patients don't have any metal in their mouth, when there's no galvanic effect or electrical disturbance to the to the normal electrical flow in their body, that the microbes can really balance. So I know Candida, thrives in a more acidic or inflamed environment. And I think that when you have a much stronger negative galvanic effect, it really impacts enzyme function. It impacts blood flow. It can impact the type of flora that can thrive.
Interesting. Because I have heard from other holistic practitioners, non-dentists, that have, I've never understood why they said it, but basically it's very difficult to get rid of systemic yeast when you have amalgams in the mouth.
Yes, I would think that it's related more to the electrical current generated off of those noise. Like when you measure them, if you take just a battery tester, like something you can buy from Radio Shack, you can test fillings. You can do it. Anyone can do it themselves in their mouth. And your body should run on a -2 millivolt current, give or take. And when you measure these fillings, they can measure -10, -20, even up to -30 millivolts per second.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's a huge change. And, I think that impacts my
combined. And so what are you doing for your fillings then? Like, what do you use? Is it a composite?
So we're metal free. The best chairside material that I've come across is something called Admira Fusion. It's a ceramic based resin, meaning that the filling that we're putting in chairside, not made in the lab, is primarily a ceramic. It's an erosimer, it's called. So it's 3 to 5% plastic.
Okay.
That's the least amount that I'm aware of available on the market. Most of them are about 20% plastic.
Okay. And obviously, I mean, they're not degrading and stuff like that, much, much slower rate of degradation.
Than the amalgam fillings, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, I mean, you know, fillings last an average of 7 to 10 years. They sometimes need to be replaced. The thing about the mercury fillings, the amalgam fillings, is you can have, sometimes you see patients where they're in their mouth for like 40 years.
Yeah.
I don't think you really will get that out of a resin.
Right.
There's the pro and con of any material. And
well, you're also not going to get all the mercury vapor either.
That's it. And there is another, I mean, you can make something in the lab. You can make a porcelain or all ceramic option in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
The cost goes up.
Yeah, totally. So, and staying on point here with fillings for a minute, you have a pretty interesting procedure for removing amalgam fillings, which I was very impressed with, the chlorophyll shots and whatnot. So perhaps just walk us through what that looks like, because I would love to share that with people who have never heard of this before.
So we're trying to take every opportunity we can to protect our patients. It all comes down to that original idea about reducing toxicity, reducing invasiveness. So with every procedure, we've tried to break it down and say, how can we do this the best for our patients? So when it comes to if we're removing any amalgam, the first thing we look at is, why does the amalgam need to be replaced? And we go through that with our patient. The next step is to do it in a safe manner. I always recommend that they have a conversation with their systemic practitioner, whether it's a nutritionist or a naturopath or a medical doctor, but just to have that conversation about if they want to consider doing some type of detox after the filling is out, or if they want to consider maybe prepping their system for the replacement. I know some practitioners like to do different steps beforehand to make sure that they're able to excrete the material well. And then in terms of our specific protocol in the office, we give a slurry of charcoal and chlorella before and after to rinse with. That helps to bind to any mercury that gets past our defenses during the replacement process. We have an oxygen over the nose to give a contained breathing source. We use a special suction unit that goes around the tooth to help pull any vapors that get come off the tooth. We use a lot of water, and then we have a special technique where we section the filling and pop out the pieces to minimize the amount that we're drilling out.
Yeah, and I mean, I've had that done with you, and I got to say, it was there's a lot of moving parts to it, but I was thoroughly impressed with the sort of I don't know what you'd call them, fail safes, if you will, and the tools that you used. And yeah, I mean, you know, for those listening, I mean, chlorella and activated charcoal are very well known to bind a lot of toxins, and chlorella especially binding mercury in the gut. So so you're pretty much on point there, Michael. I guess just before we wrap things up, you know, I don't want to take up too much more of your time today. You also are like in your office, you have alternative practitioners, but what I've noticed recently is an osteopath, like doing a lot of like adjustments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Has that become quite popular as a sort of adjunct?
I mean, osteopathy is amazing. I can tell you from personal experience, just a lovely treatment. I work with Bryce Bernard a lot, and I would be doing him a disservice to only isolate one or two specific, therapies that he does. I often will send him somebody for, you know, let's say like a TMJ or like a grinding issue.
Right.
He's up to a whole other world, but, it goes without saying, you know, the physical aspect, you know, if someone's grinding, clenching, if there's a postural issue, if there's an imbalance in the joint or the neck or whatnot, then of course osteopathy can be useful. But where we've really expanded is in surgery. Okay. So if you go back to the root canal controversy for a second, what we're really talking about is a potential necrosis or a potential infection that's in the tooth or in the bone. And that can be with the presence of a root canal, or that can also be in the bone without a root canal. So just as an example, today I had a young lady who she had her wisdom tooth out around 10 years ago, let's say, and she's had issues there ever since. She had a CT scan again to check on the spot, and nothing showed up. But she felt like there was something wrong in her upper right wisdom tooth area. There's pain there when you palpate. So I opened up the area and took a look, and there's a hole in the bone.
Part
of the bone that never healed. It's necrotic bone. There's a term, NECO, or cavitation. It's not recognized in Canada. As a dentist in Canada, I can't really recognize it, but it's something that I see in my practice. So, you know, it would be in the same concern in terms of how it's impacting your health, the same way like a root canal, because it's this cavitation in the bone. So the whole idea is we want that to heal. How do we get that to heal? By encouraging blood flow to the area. Blood is the magical healer of all things. So blood will bring in the nutrients, it will take out the waste products, it will bring in the progenitor cells and will turn into bone. And so we need to get blood flow there. The way that I know how to do that is by, again, step one, always work with your practitioner. So I know, you know, homeopathic drainage can be helpful. There's other modalities that can be helpful. I debride the area, I ozonate the area, I use platelet rich fiber, but my one of my go-tos is osteopathy. And so I'm a firm believer in osteopathy encouraging blood flow. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because he encourages lymph drainage. He'll you know, manipulate that part of her body so that blood can flow into that area easier. And so, pretty much after all of my surgeries now, I recommend osteopathy afterwards. And you can often see, let's say if you take a wisdom teeth and the patient comes back very swollen, they have a treatment with him, and then the swelling really comes down.
Huh. Neat. Well, sounds like you're obviously on the right track. Loving to hear what you're up to and what you're talking about. And just how, you know, your practice, I feel, is definitely right on the cutting edge, obviously here in Toronto, but I think also elsewhere, you know, just hearing how you're sort of adopting and researching things that are going on internationally speaking and not just local. So, Michael, I'm going to wrap it up there, but, you know, where can folks get hold of you or catch up with you? What's the best place for them to check you out?
So I would say schechterdental.com. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. Schechter Dental. My email address is on the website. If anyone ever has like a specific question for me, they can email me, they can call the office and get in touch with me.
Great.
I do my best to be accessible, and it's all about working with together and trying to achieve better health.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Michael. Again, great work and lovely to sit down and talk with you. And for those of you listening out there, if you have never heard of a holistic or biological dentist and you are considering switching things up or maybe not really getting the results that you're looking for, or just trying a safer, more non-invasive alternative, definitely look into Schechter Dental and Dr. Mike here. He does a fantastic job, and I think the busyness that you see and the wait times that he has in his clinic are a testament to that. So thanks again for coming on the show, and we'll catch up with you soon, Michael.
Okay, thank you so much. Great to chat with you.
And you. And those of you listening out there, if you have enjoyed the show, please consider sharing, subscribing, tweeting, yelping, whatever you got to do to help us get the good word out there. And you have yourself an awesome day. All right, thanks for listening.